If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grimerica Show, coming at you here a week before Christmas,
I can't believe it's that close already. Jeez.
I can believe it, dude. It's just dark all the time. It's, you know, that's where you really notice it. You're leaving the house, you must notice it. It's like basically dark when you leave and dark when you get back.
Yep.
I mean, I was almost out early today. Because we just lifted that Olympic thing up, that thing from the 1988 Olympics, the Olympic Arch.
Wow.
The Olympic Plaza that all the athletes went under.
You lifted that up to do what?
I didn't lift it up technically. So we just put in some new columns in place because they're redoing all downtown. They decided they weren't going to put it down there. So they put it up. It's cold though. Cold as shit.
Yeah.
So, but it's kind of neat. Need to see. I left halfway through, but there was like the dude who originally designed it back in 88 was there. It's this whole archway. It's got to be it's 4 + 3 + 3, so 10 meters long. What's that? 33 feet, 35 feet, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And probably 10 feet wide, 8 feet wide, and like a triangle. And the top peak is probably, 8 feet high, 6 feet, eight.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is all made without a single nail or screw. Wow. It's all like these little weird cuts to hold it together. There are some wooden dowels in it here and there, but all the cuts are weird. And So I guess it was a big to do. I don't know. This whole time I've just been treating it like this old shitty piece of wood that I gotta deal with. But anytime you got to install something or have something installed onto your steel and there's a bunch of like 70 people watching, only like 30 showed up because of the weather though. So that was kind of a reprieve, but it fit. So, it was good.
Yeah. Imagine that. And all of a sudden you're there and it doesn't fit, put a hole in the wrong place or something.
I got up where I headed down early, brought the guys coffee. And then it was just so much standing around. I ended up leaving before it even happened. Cause it's like, they were sitting in their nice warm truck, but there's only two seats. So I was just standing outside for like an hour.
When it's minus 20 and you're standing there and you're not working, it's kind of,
Standing still. It's the worst, dude.
Yeah. This is a great show with Dan Friday. I mean, he's an amazing artist.
We just recorded it.
Artist extraordinaire. Yeah, this is fantastic.
Just finished it. Of course, I don't know if I've told the story on the show or not, but I was just like, I had watched Dan on Netflix when that came out, which must have been a year or two ago now. It was when I was still in the old house, I think. It must have been when I was still in the old house. Me and Cassandra mainly were watching it together and cheering for him because he was an Indian dude. And I mean, you watched it. He's clearly the coolest one of the bunch. You know what I mean? From our perspective, the rest of them are like, there's some trannies on there and there's just a bunch of people that don't fit in. And then you got Dan and it's like, this guy fits fucking, you just can kind of tell, you can sniff him out after a while. And, so we were cheering for him and, I'm just sitting on the couch just a few months ago, 2 months ago. And, I get this because anytime someone follows me on Instagram and they got that blue check mark, I check it out. Because it's on Instagram, I don't think you can just buy the check mark. But usually it's like, it's Randall or it's someone, it's someone that's got a bit of to-do And I noticed I had a blue check mark following me, so I checked it out. I didn't even, the name, there was zero name recognition, though, you know? And even his Instagram profile picture is a little, like, crazy. It's, like, zoomed in on his face. It's kind of hard to tell. So I was like, who the fuck is Dan Friday? And then, you know, lo and behold, I start going through his Instagram. I'm like, holy shit, this is that dude I was watching on Netflix. And so I messaged him. I was like, you should have won that shit, man. It was rigged. And
it's so weird because you don't even watch TV. Like, that's what's
It's like I watch, like,
one show you watched. I mean,
I can count on two hands the number of shows I've watched in the last 3 years. And it just happens to be this one. And he just happens to listen to the show and went to Egypt with our buddies. And it's, you know, there's this weird whole crazy loop, you know? So, So we started chatting and here we are. This is the
right. And then he says he's listened to the show. Yeah, right.
Then he listened to the show. He's been listening to the show while I was watching him. So now we got to talking, got to texting, had him on the show. And
that's so awesome.
Had this chat with him. Yeah. How many more are you gonna finish watching? I mean, you already know what happened, so
no, I watched a couple with him. I watched a couple with him. Me and Maria watched it. It was awesome to watch. To watch him. I mean, it is amazing stuff. I just can't imagine. Like I said in the outro after this, I just can't even fathom how they do this stuff. Artists, like, that's just something I just don't really have in me, is the art artist.
Yeah, all my kids could draw way better than me. It's crazy. All of them. All of them. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a talent I don't have.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty wild, that shit, because they just, like, stick it in there and it comes out. I mean, I made a bunch of that stuff before, you know.
Oh yeah, you know what I was going to ask? Did you blow? Like, I didn't realize they had those.
I just helped make all the stuff. Like, I helped make the little cart and the wand that you blow through, because my buddy Brad was retiring and he was going to build this. He was right in the glass blowing, and he wanted one for his place back in Ontario, but then he wanted to weld it himself. So not only did I have to help him build it, then I had to teach him how to weld it all together. And but I never got to use it, and I never got fucking no glass either. I should call him and be like, hey man, you should have gave me a piece of glass that you blew out of your thing that I helped you make. I think he paid me in cash, so I guess not. He's free and clear. I was just hired hand. I hope he's okay, you know. You never know these days.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah.
Ever since that thing happened,
you know, what I didn't ask him about, I mean, it's probably not even appropriate really for that, but do you remember on the segment we did on that segment of our other show, Roundup, America Outlawed Roundup, and
not appropriate
about the recycling and plastic recycling, and how there was a real shift that happened at one point, because they were going to go glass. Remember, they used to build glass bottles for everything, right? And they are fully recyclable. Like, you can actually recycle them, like, you know, make them into new glasses, or you could wash them out and use them. Like, I wonder if he follows that whole thing. Like, I wonder if he knows, like, the history of when glass became plastic, you know, and we have this massive plastic problem right now, and we could have gotten away from it, you know, if we had glass.
I doubt it. I mean, why would he know that?
Because he's a glass blower. I mean, he must know. Like, he worked in the shop.
Fucking glass and plastic. You're just like, huh? Yeah, the history of glass. Plastic came in, and
well, yeah, because there might be a big thing in the community where, like, there glass would have been still used.
More expensive. I do not understand. Yeah,
but you could reuse it all. Like, let's say Coca-Cola or Pepsi, like, just had the all glass stuff, and you just return it all the time, and it gets reused and reused and reused, and you must take billions and billions and billions and trillions.
Blower glass, though.
Well, they're blowing those glasses. Aren't they blowing those glasses?
Coke bottles?
Aren't they blowing those? I mean, how do they make them?
Well, you watch a show. It comes in those big chunks. Oh, well, you think Dan was in there making Coke bottles?
He was working.
So you wonder if there's... Wait, let me get if I get the context of the question. So you're wondering if glass blowers were put out of work.
Not the artists, but just the you know, the glass blowing industry, the mass production industry of it.
Do you think that, like, all the Coke bottles were blown? Like it must just be a machine that does all that.
Yeah, but it still blows them, right? Doesn't it?
I don't know. Maybe it sucks them. Anyway, I could ask him if you want.
This can be embarrassing now if he listens back to this intro.
This is, yeah. You've embarrassed yourself. Anyway, what do you got? What have you been up to?
You got a synchronized.
What? You said by Christmas you were moving in.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm close. I just got to put a final, I'm going to put the first final coat of paint on it tonight after this intro.
The first final coat?
Yeah.
Then the second.
I've got the primer on there now. I just got to do that and then clean it up a little bit and then I'll move my stuff down. It's already ready. It's almost ready.
Next week?
I haven't finished the baseboards and the trim and all that yet, but I'll just pick away at that after Christmas.
No way. Once you move in, that's never happened.
No, I'm not moving full. Like I'm not going to have bookshelves in it and stuff yet. Just the enough. Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. Yeah. Looking forward to just having a proper office with a background. I don't have to use the green screen and stuff. I can just proper studio office down there.
That's more.
Because it's hard right now because I'm loud for Maria when she's like in bed or if she's sick or like even though I've got it like a studio here, it's still, I wake her up all the time. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you get all fired up podcasting or when you get all fired up.
The other day she was like, she even texted like, you're screaming. It was on a roundup last week. She was like, you're screaming. You're being really loud. I was like, oh, I guess I should calm down a little bit. I was excited over something. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was the slush fund. I was excited over the opaque slush fund.
Could be. You get revved up. You might just been fired up at me because I did agree with you on something. Anyway, what we do agree on is that we need support. GrandAmerica.ca/support. If you can, when you can, guys. It seems like a free show. It's not a free show. It's technically a value for value podcast. If you get some value from our little podcast here, you head over to GrandAmerica.ca/support today. Sign up for a monthly, make a one-time donation, send us an email. You know, some people send us little newsletters. The mail's been shut down, so we don't know what anyone sent us. I haven't even got a chance to check the new P.O. box yet, but I'll check that over the holidays. See, hopefully the Observer. I don't know if he's listening, but he was always sending us that Observer. Hopefully he can get our new address and start sending that over there.
Yeah, if people have extra Christmas cards or books or, like, you know, cash.
Christmas cards.
Yeah. Well, it's Christmas coming up. They could send us Christmas cards and stuff.
I don't have any Christmas cards unless there's cash in them. Yeah. Christmas fucking cards. Send your cash. GrandAmerica.ca/support. Or send, you know, a book. Books are nice. You know what's always awesome? Chandra sends t-shirts. And they're always great t-shirts.
Yeah, Chandra's awesome.
A lot of shirts, so. He's also coming to the Azores, which we should also mention. We're down to like 7 or 8 spots left for this trip. I mean, it just came out on the 6th. It's been 11 days since it went up for sale officially. And the reception has been, I mean, it's a pretty low attendance event, but still the reception has been good. I mean, right now with 7 or 8 spots left, I've got 5 or 6 people sort of kicking tires or saying they're humming and hawing or, you know, we're literally at the point where the tickets could be gone in a couple days at any given moment. There's a lot of buzz around this. We don't know when we're going to do a second one eventually. We don't know. We haven't done the dates ironed out yet. So don't panic if you don't have the money or, you know, it's fine. But if you do and you want to get in on this one, don't hesitate. Go over there. At least get your deposit in, and then you're on the list because it is going to be a hell of a trip. I mean, if you don't want to fly that far, we also have that other great trip coming up in Bonneville out of Salt Lake City for a week with Randall and Brad and the crew cruising around down there. That'll be with the boys, too. You know, we'll have Nikki, Pat, and Ian driving around on that one.
May
11th to 17th. Salt Lake, it's Utah and Idaho. So that's going to be a good time down there. And then, of course, the Azores is next November 4th to 16th. So check that out, guys. Contact @thecabin.com. we don't know when the next one's coming up, but we're always working on stuff. We've got big plans. We, you know, when there's enough interest, we'll definitely do another Scablands. We want to do a Grail tour. So when you go to that contact at thecabin.com, there's the option to sign up for the newsletter. If you do that, I send out a newsletter a month or so, or if we're running out of tickets, or if we have a new event and you have that newsletter, you'll know and you'll have a link right there. So it's something to do if you're into it. So check that guy out, guys. Contact at thecabin.com. Back over to the support, grandamerica.ca/support. If you can, when you can, sign up for a couple bucks a month. You are a noble, Grand America noble. And if you do that to tune of 1,000, which not too many people have, but if you have, and we love them, I'm not going to start naming names, because if I start, I have to name them all, and there's too many. But we do have a half dozen or so lords around here that over the last decade have supported us $1,000 or so. Not all of them are cash. Some of them just time, talent, treasure, as the No Agenda Boys say. It doesn't have to always be cash. We got some people who have helped us out pricelessly with music, like Felix, and art like Nap, server help like our buddy George. So the list goes on and on. I'm going to stop there before I get myself in trouble. I already did. I started naming names. So anyway, check that out, guys. Of course, we do. If you want, we still don't have a god in Grand America. We are godless. We have decided that for 10 grand, you can be one of the gods of Grand America. For now, you'd be the god, because there's only... He'd be the deity, because there's no more. Eventually, you might have some competition. There might be another one, in which case it would be whoever gets more gets to be Zeus, and then there's lesser gods. But let's get, for now, you're the guy, 10 grand Canadian. That's like 4 grand US. I mean, that's basically nothing. Just kidding. I mean, I'm not kidding. I don't mean it like that, but we'd be just happy if you give us $2, $1, $3, $5. What can you afford a month? We'd be happy with it. You people have decided to do that this month, so I do want to honor them. We have Evan Down signing up for a monthly $5.55 a month. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. And then we have $50 from Bradley Borton. Let's keep on keeping on.
Thank you, guys.
And then $33.33 from Mike Fritsch. Fresh.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. So thanks, guys. That really helps. I mean,
it does, yeah.
Times are tough. We get a lot of cancellations, you know, and support is, I mean, I always sort of bitch and complain, but support is that, you know, definitely the lowest it's been in a while. We get it. In Canada, people can barely survive. We get emails all the time from people that say they can't support the show because it's $6 they need. But if you can, support it. Pick up the slack for those people that can't. And when you can again, we'll still be here making great content the whole time. Whether you have money or not, we're just going to keep coming at you.
We need you.
Fall into some money, get a new job, back on your feet, new government maybe. Send us a check.
There's
America.ca/support.
And there's other ways too. I mean, you can email us feedback, synchronicities, trip reports. I got one right here for you. It's awesome. And, you know, or even review the show, tell your friends about the show. There's all a bunch of ways you can support the new media now, right?
Buy our audiobooks.
Oh, yeah. Buy our audiobooks. Yeah, that's a really good way to support it. That's a great way. And you get something, you know, directly there. Go to adultbrain.ca and there's links to like all that stuff. Spotify, Audible, YouTube, all that. But all our books are on adultbrain.ca. Actually, don't we have some new ones on there too? Let me just pull it up quickly. Did you talk about the books already? Ooh, we have Edgar Allan Poe, The Works, Volume 5, Tales, Mystery and Occultism, John Stuart Mill on Liberty, The Diary of a Drug Fiend from Aleister Crowley, Stories from the Fairy Queen and the Secret Commonwealth, Elves, Fauns, and Fairies, The New Man. So, there's like a ton of audiobooks there from people, too. I got an email I want to read. Synchronicity.
All right, let's have it.
I got some feedback from the roundups too, but I'll be reading those during the roundups tomorrow.
Is it good or bad? I wouldn't need a lot of pressure to
What?
Is it good or bad?
Well, there's some bad and good.
I could be shamed out of doing that show.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Against me or you?
No, it wasn't about the roundup. It was about the probably me mainly because I didn't push back against one of our previous guests.
Which one?
I don't want to get into it. I know you want to talk about it, but Dr. Rachel Ehrenfeld about Syria and the Middle East.
Oh, God. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, we shouldn't even go there.
I pushed back a little bit. But not much.
Maybe not in the free half. Anyways, here we go. This is from Alan. And speaking of Idaho.
What do you say to a Jew that's fucking freaking out about the destruction of this could go one of two ways.
Talk about it tomorrow night in the roundup. Let's not talk about it here. Speaking of Idaho, hello, Grimerica boys from Boise, Idaho. I was listening to your Ryan Bledsoe podcast today, and he mentioned how the crafts were alive and the metals in the crafts were quasi-crystals and not from Earth. Fast forward to later that evening. So he's listening to our show about Ryan. That was one of my favorite UFO shows with Bledsoe. And so later that evening, he's sitting on his couch looking at the weather, app on my phone scanning the globe for the coldest areas. I check out Canada and then Norway and end up in northeast Russia with temps at minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit. I end up scanning satellite imagery on the map app on my phone and I come across an area in northeast Russia with lots of lakes and rivers that looks pristine. I find a large crater lake called Elgigtigin Lake. And to the east is a large river system that flows south to the Anadyr River. After a quick Google search, I came across a blog that explains how the city of Anadyr is the capital city of Chukotka, and the easternmost town in Russia. So it's the easternmost town in Russia, like all the way out there.
Oh, yeah, dude. When we went to Banff for the weekend for our honeymoon. And I was in the shop. We were looking at how huge Russia is and how far east. It's literally from Vancouver to Newfoundland, from like Moscow to this town you're talking about. It's like the entirety of Canada with nothing in between.
Yeah. Yeah, Moscow is quite west, really. It's pretty close to all the European cities, really.
Russia is fucking massive.
Yeah. So Anadyr is a port town and the administrative center of Chukotka Autonomous Okrug, Russia, located at the mouth of the Anadyr River. Later in the blog, they mentioned Paul Steinhardt.
I mean, it's like
self what?
Sufficient.
I don't know. That's what I was wondering. Center of Autonomous Okrug. Anyways, Paul Steinhardt in 2011 led a group of scientists that landed in Anadyr en route to an expedition in the Koryak Mountains to search for naturally occurring quasi-crystals. Three quasi-crystals have been found to date from the material gathered on that expedition, including icosahedrite, decagonite, and a yet unnamed third natural quasi-crystal, which, unlike icosahedrite and decagonite, is unlike anything ever previously synthesized in a laboratory. Steinhardt's team has established that the natural quasi-crystals were embedded in meteorite that hit the Earth about how long ago? 15,000 years ago.
I figured.
I wonder if Randall knows about all this research. I mean, how weird is that, eh? That they come across these crystals embedded in the meteorite and they're doing like this separate research that says it landed. What's Hancock and Randall saying? 14,800, right? Because it's 12,800 BC, right?
Yeah.
Or is it 10,800 BC? No, I always get this mixed up. Or is it 12,800 years ago? What?
It's 13,000 years ago.
So this could have been the beginning of the, you know how the Younger Dryas is that second melt period there? This could be the beginning of the first one. I mean, it's right around that area.
Could be.
I don't normally write into shows, but this is blowing my mind. I've never heard of quasi crystals and would never expect to come across them.
Heard of a quasi crystal.
And you were in the show. Dude, I know you. You were even participating in the conversation. That's a quasi. And never would expect to come across them twice in the same day. Keep up the good work. I hope this synchro find you. Best wishes and happy holidays to you and yours. So,
is it like an art crystal?
Like a what?
Is it like an art crystal?
An arc?
Yeah, like the ones those dudes wear on their neck.
Well, I think no, it's natural. I think a quasi crystal would be natural. Well, I don't know actually. Now I'm. I mean, these guys found them that were naturally made. So I, you know.
Quasi.
Now I've lost it.
Quasi crystal is a solid material whose atomic arrangement is ordered but not strictly periodic. Traditional crystals repeat their atomic pattern in a consistent three-dimensional grid, much like a wallpaper pattern that regularly repeats. In contrast, quasi-crystals display a form of long-range order without that repeating periodic pattern. Discovered by materials scientist Dan Shipman in 1982, quasi-crystals often exhibit symmetries that are forbidden in regular crystals, such as fivefold, tenfold, or other non-integer rotational symmetries. These symmetries yield dazzling, intricate patterns and give quasi-crystals unique physical and optical properties. For instance, they can be extremely rigid and exhibit unusual electrical and thermal conductivity behaviors. In essence, quasi-crystals occupy a conceptual middle ground between crystalline solids, which have strictly repetitive lattice structures, and amorphous solids like glass, which lack long-range order. I wonder if that's how they made the pyramid. And their study has led to new insight in the nature of solid matter, paving the way for novel materials with potentially useful applications.
Wow, that's interesting. So I just searched, like, what do quasi-crystals look like? And look what comes up. That looks like the UFO that I saw, basically.
Not so just got, you, like, Dan Friday, too.
What?
Well, Dan Friday seen an orange orb.
Yeah. 6-cube quasi crystals. So, I mean, this doesn't really get. Oh, there's some. I guess that's the grain came from a sand. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. They're looking at views of icosahedrons. So it seems like it's kind of like in a almost a platonic shape.
There you have it. All right. Well, we should get out of here.
Look at that. That's a quasi crystal that looks like a dodecahedron. It looks exactly like a dodeca.
That's cool. I want one.
Holy, that's crazy, dude. That's like a natural 12-sided dice.
It is 12, right?
Yeah. Dodecahedron is 12.
Dodecahedron. So support the show, guys. Sign up for CAC. Contact at thecabin.com. All that great stuff. Do you have a bio for a new buddy, Dan?
Yeah, I do. Yep. So Daniel Joseph Friday is a native of the Lummi Nation and a lifelong resident of Washington State's Puget Sound region, drawing from cultural themes and using modern processes. Friday's work is contemporary in format while maintaining basic Native American qualities. Dan has spent the past two decades working with artists, and he lives in the Northwest. He maintains an independent glass studio. His work can be found in collections around the world. So, and this is what he says, just a little mini paragraph from his thing. When I saw glass blowing for the first time, I felt as though I grew an inch. That is to say, a huge weight was lifted from my shoulders. I had finally figured out what I wanted to be when I grew up. This was no small feat for someone who, as a youth, was rebellious and misguided. Glass altered my life. In spite of my colorful past and by the grace of a loving community, I found my passion in glass living as an artist. May not be directly saving the world, but perhaps we are saving ourselves and hopefully in the process making the world a better place. And it's fridayglass.com. That's his website. And there's a link to his Instagram on that website.
And of course, you can watch him in Blown Away on Netflix season 3. So enjoy the chat, guys.
Actually, I don't know if there's a link. Sorry, I'm gonna send a link of his Instagram. I'll put the link in the show notes.
Sounds good. All right, guys. Enjoy the chat. And Friday.
On Friday, thanks for joining us in Great America. How you doing?
I'm good. Hey, fellas, it's a pleasure to meet you. Stoked to finally put a. I mean, I guess I've seen your faces before, but here we are talking in person. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Yeah, we've seen your faces too. And I just realized you grew up like I grew up in Vancouver, so we used to go down as kids camping in your neck of the woods all the time. Laconner, I saw Laconner somewhere on one of your websites, and. Yep. We had a Thousand Trails membership, so we were down in like Chehalis and Laconner, and even you were mentioning near Wenatchee there too. Like we used to camp all around the Northwest there. Wow. Yeah, the kids, you know, in the '80s and nineties, it was really
cool. Riding in the back of a pickup without a canopy. That's how we did it. Yeah, Chehalis. I mean, that's almost Oregon, bro. You guys did some traveling.
Oh yeah, we'd go there. Yeah, as kids, just camping all the time. Yeah.
So Vancouver, were you guys like, I got a lot of family up at Wasanich and, you know, Songhees and those tribes right in there, the Coast Salish, because Lummi is just across the canal there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I drove down there as a 15 or 16 year old buying fireworks and trying to bring it back over the border as a kid, like from the Lummi Reserve, like sell fireworks to us. Yeah. Cause they were illegal up here, I think.
Did you get them back?
Yeah, we got him back. Yeah. It was fun.
Well, for us, it was always the, like, we would go that way and we would bring, you know, people would always bring back, I mean, back in the 90s or whatever, the Beaster, like the Canadian BC weed from there.
Yeah, right.
big log. Right? It had that, like, unique smell to it. All tasted the same, even if it was different. I don't know what it was.
Yeah. What did you call it back then? I mean, it was skunk to us back then, I guess.
We just called it the Beasters, like from BC. Beasters, yeah.
BC Bud was famous back in the day, even because I was from Ontario and out east, like halfway across anyway. And BC Bud was always famous, you know, from BC. It probably never was from BC, you know, but that was always the go for BC Bud.
Well, it's just kind of like a port, too. I mean, isn't BC? It's got that, you know, by the time, first time I went up there, what's that neighborhood called? Like Hastings. I'm like, oh, this is crazy. You know, when I was in the 90s, now that's just like Seattle every day. Right. Yeah. But,
but now Hastings looks like a fucking war zone.
Oh, bro, I bet.
Because here they're just like, it's fine. You can just like let loose, do your drugs. I mean, here, so you could get a prescription for drugs, and it's like, so you just go to the doctor and you say, I'm addicted to drugs, so I need drugs. And they're like, okay, here's a prescription. And then, I mean, we did a story where this lady was just like, this drug dealer standing outside the prescription place, and it's like she's coming in and buying the weed, taking the weak drugs from the junkie and like trading them for the fentanyl and that kind of shit. And you know, that weak shit is ending up, you know, in amongst our kids.
Dude, it's crazy. Well, you used to not, you could just go to the, I mean, so Lummi, like, again, just like I was saying about BC, is it's these port cities and like these big places of entry. So we've always been really kind of heavy drug traffic. You know, they used to be, you'd hear like people, they would take it in boats. They'd drag like either cash or heroin, like in Florida, like looking for the white grouper to like wash up on the beach. Shit would just wash up on the beach. There's that famous time at Lummi when cash just washed up on the beach because that was like a major drug. Because like BC and Lummi are just right at the corners of the country that, you know, we've been like overrun with fentanyl. And
wow. You
know, there was a time this past year when, you know, six kids died within a week. And I mean, in a small community like that, it just everyone, I mean, it's just really a dark time. And, you know, I grew up, I vacillate between libertarian ideas and this theological, you know, should drugs be legal? Yes. But then I should be able to protect myself and my house from the people on them. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's hard to say.
It's hard to say because, I mean, I don't know what to do with that because it seems like, my wife sent me a story today because our opposition party leader was just like, someone got caught with 44 pounds of fentanyl or something like that. And he's like, that's not even that much. And it's like, you know, I'm just thinking to myself and it's like, you know, like 15-year-old Darren probably would have thought that was cool as shit.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been the cool thing to say. But at 40 with kids, it's like, you know, I don't really want that shit around. So, I mean, that's where you could go. So I go the opposite way where I said, instead of libertarian, I need to go further right from that to anarchy so I can just go fucking shoot the people. Or maybe I shouldn't say that.
You know, like you've become a protector, whereas when you were a kid, yeah, thank God that I would have tried. I tried every fucking thing, you know, once upon a time, you know, when you were just – I was on the street. It wasn't that I wasn't loved, but I was out there, you know? And so for me to like, I might've just, you know, I mean, I've tried some things. I'm lucky to, you know, we've all dodged.
Yeah. Yeah. And tending towards more anarchy. I don't know. Is anarchal a word?
Anarchical.
If we're more anarchical, then it would be to the point where if some dude's pushing fentanyl, then like the dads in the community just get together and go kick in his door and, you know, deal with it. And, you know, maybe you probably don't kill him. You just, you know, rough him up. And I feel like that kind of shit probably used to happen quite a bit back in the day. And it's like nowadays, if I did that, I'd probably get arrested.
Well, absolutely.
I'd be the one who ended up in jail.
Yeah. They did that at Lummi recently. They just ran, you know, they just uncovered some big ring that went all the way to Montana where they were targeting all the reservations are historically these lawless places kind of, you know, where drugs in New York, it's like Mohawk, you know, Iroquois reservations are like right on the border too. And so that, you know, there used to be a thing called a J Treaty where as Lummi, you could go be a dual citizen because so, you know, the border just went right through it. But, you know, again, in these, like when we're talking about the laws, it's like the Irish democracy of like, well, there's some dude down here killing all our fucking kids. I mean, who's going to miss this motherfucker?
Yeah. Right.
So
what happened with the six kids? What kind of was it fentanyl laced and stuff?
Or it was fentanyl. And, you know, it's
like straight up or
straight up. And, you know, I've lost a lot of friends along the way. Heroin is, some people can do it all. I mean, Keith Richards getting the best shit in the world, right? He's not going anywhere. But I think some of the fentanyl, like the dose, 44 pounds, that's enough to kill a whole fucking city, right? Like, it's just like a cop will get one little gram of sweat. You know, like the sweat will transfer fentanyl into the cop's hand. That's why they all wear the rubber gloves now, you know? And yeah, that shit's just crazy that it would, you know, that there's such a powerful drug. It does feel like some sort of assault, you know what I mean? Or, you know, you as a parent and a protector.
My theory on it is that it's payback, right? It's payback for that opioid shit we did to China back in the day.
Yeah. Well, the more you learn, you're like, yeah, dude, all's fair in love and war, right? And so we like to, you know, as someone who's American and Native American, proud to, you know, but like it's such a pejorative now, almost like it's American imperialism, you know, and like everyone wants it's tough, you know, when you, the more you learn about history, it's like, God, I still believe in like apple pie and raisin. I believe in the family unit and, you know, in families and
it's
stuff.
Coming back around to traditional in a way.
There's so much stuff that is like, you know, we are not, our hands are not clean if you're going to speak about us as a group, you know.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, I gotta mention this about the drug thing. I do think there is there's a happy medium there where I think we're not following it in BC and Canada, but the boy Portugal did theirs, right? Like there has to be some freedom, like some, cause I'm the same thing. Like I'm coming up on 17 years now, coming in a few months clean and sober. And like, I kind of wish they were illegal. Like I think they should be legalized or decriminalized, but there has to be some rule of law, like, some rule of law there. Like they have to, if there's, you know, doing it in public is a different thing that maybe it shouldn't be allowed, or crimes, they have to be tougher on crimes. Like we just let that other second half go. So we kind of followed the Portugal model for a part and then just stopped. We didn't.
Well, and then it's what's crazy is some of those people like still hold, like I come down from the era where I got uncles and aunties that are fucking living out there and people that are, but they still hold down a job. You know, this whole like lawlessness that comes along with it. It's like you said, Darren, I caught a dude breaking in my house in Seattle like 2 years ago. I caught this guy coming over the fence, fucking twacked out of his brain. He's got bolt cutters and a garbage bag. I chase him down. I get like 2 or 3 blocks away and I'm like, finally, I'm going to tune this motherfucker up. And the fucking, all the lights come on, the neighbors, what's going on? You know, hey, leave him alone. I'm like, this dude just tried to fucking hit me. I'm going to go to jail for beating this guy up, you know, for coming in my house, you know, and maybe I shouldn't have chased him off the property. The cops come. I'm like, they drove right by first. I flag him down. I'm like, whoa, what the fuck is this? Go get in my truck, go chase down the cops. I'm like, this guy back here, blah, blah. They question him. He's got the bolt cutters in him. And then they let him go. I'm like, you're not even, you know, I can't do your job. You can't do your, I mean, whose job is it? You know, like, so that just told me right there, you know what I mean? It's like, you say one thing, but I can see with your actions what I need to do. I need to get my fucking family the fuck out of here, finding needles in my yard, you know, in this really nice-ish Seattle suburban neighborhood. You know, it's just like, oh, man, you guys aren't here to protect me. Never mind that you take all our money for that, you know?
Yeah, it's never been more apparent, I mean, that they're not here to protect us.
No. And well, I think, you know, I mean, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I guess the Indians have kind of known that for a long time, but it's for the rest of the population, it's kind of new. It's like, wait, what?
That's what I mean about
messing with the BIPOCs.
Yeah, the whole American thing. And it's like, as a Native American, I grew up from my great uncle in our family stories, just hearing about the residential schools. And then like America likes to conveniently be like, well, Canada, look what they did. I'm like, bitch, it's everywhere. You know, just the graves you did find, or just the, you know, and it's like, these are the stories I grew up with, you know, and it's great to hear it in this like really contemporary, like, well, context, at least we're talking about it now, but it's like, and then on to the next story. And then there's a, you know, it you know, it just goes away, and how some people, you know, and no Native American person, no any community member speaks for everyone in that community. But I'm always surprised when Native American people are like, well, trust the government. You know, I'm like, I don't know anyone that does trust the government, dude. You know, it's just like, it's not that long ago. You know, it's just not that long ago.
Well, that's what I think is good that is coming out now, is there's a spillover effect where it's affecting, everybody's realizing like, well, it's not even just about the natives and what happened to them. It's about the government ruling all of us. Like
the government, you know, around the world.
Yeah.
God forbid they find some natural resource where you live. You're like, oh, wait, can we give you that land? We're coming back. You know?
The other thing that always weirds me out, and I wonder if you see this in the States too, is that how many of the Indians in Canada just still ended up flocking to Christianity and flocking to the church. And it's like, man, these motherfuckers like steamrolled you. And you're just like, I mean, I guess it's just the
that happened all
how the well the indoctrination worked.
Well, and you had to imagine that these people were living like, you know, I know it's crazy because I feel so grateful to live like where we're from still, more or less, like the San Juan Islands where Brett Weinstein lives now. That's where my people are from. And those are all $1 million, like multi-million dollar Michelin star restaurant. Like it's a crazy little utopia that they've got built out on these islands. But that's where we're from. The reservation is really close. But these people were like just barely making it. You know, like when they were forced to the reservation, my great grandpa, who I'm named after, is, you know, the doctor he was in, you know, they were just looking for some sort of assimilation. They lost all his family's land. He had 100 acres on the where you catch the ferry to go into the islands is on the Lummi Reservation. And that whole area was our family's land, but he lost it from a tooth infection because he was going to die. His head was swollen up and his wife was like, doctor, can you fix him? You know, and took all his land, you know? And so that's these people, I feel like in my dad's generation, they would tell people they were Mexican or like Filipino because they didn't want the stigma of being Native American. So that's, I have a lot of family members that had went to the church and, you know, I'm a spiritual guy. And Graham, congratulations on your time. I've got 15
Thanks,
years.
Thanks.
I've heard as much as I'm an isolationist and I would love to just disappear into my little like 5-acre utopia in the mountain. I need people. I've heard the voice of God and I'm not like religion, but like in a room of AA, when some dude is like, I'm a low level attracted to minors, you know, like somebody you'd want to just fuck kill. But this is the guy over here saying the truth. It just rings like a bell when you hear someone say something that's true or just from such an honest place that you would never hear. And that spirituality, I mean, I would never disparage someone for being spiritual, however they see fit. But I just, yes, organized religion. I mean, don't even like get into, you know, Catholic, whatever somebody brings them joy. I like that libertarian of idea of like live and let live and you do you and you're at the edge of your property. But yeah, what they've done to Native people. I mean, like anybody could be Catholic. It's crazy. The oldest Catholic church in Washington State is on the Lummi Reservation. St. Walk, you know, I won't disparage it. People that I love that place as a place of worship, but man, it makes you have to take a pause.
It's just ironic, you know?
Yeah. We're not we're in this new time. It's so crazy to be like a contemporary Native person. It's like, you know, we're talking about like a Paleolithic society that met the wheel. Let's just start with a wheel, not even the fucking iPhone that we were like, you know, God forbid I don't have my phone. I can't handle my business or do anything. I'm a modern Native person. I'm trying to like, I just turned 49 last week and somehow I become like elder adjacent. And like, I've got young kids that are like looking up to me or, you know, I've got like, I'm supposed to be like I would never say that I speak for our community, but I ended up in these roles where I represent, you know, somebody's doing something, anything, you know what I mean? Not doing fentanyl. I don't fish anymore. We're a fishing tribe. You know, but I think tribal communities are like, you know, like, so that generation, like my dad's generation or in between, they were like trying to not be associated with, if you could get out of the reservation, get the fuck out of here. You know what I mean? Like going to school in a portable with a fucking leaky roof. It's like, I mean, I've seen shit, Bellingham Bay, you know, Vancouver, BC. Yeah. Yep. Some of the like that's like European West Coast Pacific Northwest. It's like it's such a crazy city. Seattle, mm-hmm. Money over the top. We're sending money to around the world, which is great. I don't like hearing kids fucking dying, but I could show you kids living in third world conditions just across Bellingham Bay, not even a fucking mile from Bellingham, which is like, you know, BC, like. Shitting in a bucket, got power cords running through 3 properties, no running water, families living in cars, in like, it's not, I mean, you don't have to, it's just a crazy place to be as a contemporary Native person. And it's like, I'm not saying I don't care about things going on around the world, but I know I shouldn't be an isolationist or.
Well the problem.
It becomes overwhelming and it's like, what? Yeah. You got to act locally at some point.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the problem with that stuff going around the world is it's not really getting to where it's supposed to go either. That's the problem, is it's coming back in the politicians' pockets or it's just going into some rich, like, there's a quote that says, like, the rich countries sending money to poor countries is really rich countries sending money to poor countries, rich people, you know, the rich people.
Their nonprofit is running.
Rich countries, it's the poor people in rich countries, money going to the rich people in the poor countries, you know?
It's money laundering, probably.
Yeah, well, like Haiti or the, I'm just going crazy. I'm trying to watch my, you know, Foundation. Well, you know what I mean? We're running Haiti over here. Like, where does the money go? I mean, does their life get exponentially better, you know, after one of these catastrophes?
I don't think that we should be sending a dime overseas. Because we have the same problem here in Canada where it's like, you know, the reserves don't have clean drinking water. They got to boil their water, but we got all kinds of money for Ukraine and all kinds of money for this and that. And we got money to send to everyone $250 right before Christmas to try and buy some votes, but we can't figure out this.
Like, or Maui water. Or North Carolina, or it's like, oh, did you just have a tragedy? Here's $700. I'm like, fuck, dude. I get a $700 fucking utility bill if I fucking go crazy. You know what I mean? Like, what is that going to even do? It's like a fucking slap in the face, you know?
Yeah.
So nuts.
I don't mind saying I don't care. I don't care. I think that's the problem. That's the problem with the phones that, you know, while they do give us that ability to do all this great stuff that wouldn't have been possible, you know, a generation ago, whether it's us doing the podcast or the audiobooks or, you know, you getting on Netflix and being able to expand your art stuff that way. Yeah. It opens up all that, but it comes at this cost of knowing what the fuck is going on in Israel. When it really don't matter. You know, if you take a look at the glory days, you know what the glory days all kind of really had in common is like we weren't really giving a fuck about what was going on.
Yeah.
Mind you, there is that period after World War II where we kind of were just running the place. But I think those are the two options. You either got to be isolationist or be running the place. And if you're going to run in the place, then run the place. You know, you can't just let it go to shit and steal all the money. I mean, you got to run it You got to, like, even the mafia knows that, you know, it's like they get the right people got to get paid, but they've got to keep running. Everything's got to keep going. You're not having shootouts in the streets because that's bad for business, but it's like, we got these people that want these, it's just like they're make-believe running the place. And that's the problem. It's like if we had some real fucking people capable of running the place and just, you know, steal a little money if you're running the place, whatever. But don't steal all the money and run the place. You got to fucking run the place. It has to be, because the problem is it just seems like we're unfit to govern ourselves.
It's human nature. And like, if a communist gets in, it's run by some human. If, you know, capitalist gets in, it's like this human nature thing to protect. And like you said, I think it is a two-way, it's like a double-edged sword. Like, yeah, the power of all this information, I was never even political. You know, I love that in your guys' old intro, I was never political. Any now that, you know, say, sacred cow, when I heard that, I was like, you know, yeah, that's... During COVID, dude, I was never I was fishing. You know how many jobs and girlfriends I've lost because I was just fishing on a boat where no one could get a fucking hold of me. And like before even answering machines, like if you didn't get a call back, it wasn't that I didn't love you. We didn't even have an answering machine. And now it's like 2 weeks later, where'd you go? You could be on a vacation or something. And now if you don't respond, that opportunity's gone. And living in this modern world, it's just so hard to keep up. You really can't parse out all the things. And I definitely, you
know, do. And I think where you're going up with that is everything's political now. So it's political pop culture now. Everything's political.
You know, they like Bill Clinton, like, oh, MTV. The next thing you know, it's like this little device, it's like hypnotized you. You're like electronic leech. Like I get this little like I get a text. I feel it in my neck, like someone's tugging on my. I better fucking respond. It's about some money. Or I get these ghost texts in my leg. I feel like I'm getting the vibrate when it's not even in my fucking pocket. I'm like, what, you know, I could get way out there because I, you know, I don't know. I'm just a simple dude, you know, but it is crazy, you know, and then trying to raise kids, like, when do I let them on ramp into this? Is it going to be, oh, you know, I tried buying one of those little game sticks. You plug in the back of a TV and you could play some video. And my son, I'm like, yep, you're just done. You know, you would just, you know, you could just disappear into that, you know. And you know, I'm grateful that, you know, now that, you know, I have my art and I stay busy, but I feel, you know, the days that I don't look at my phone, I feel way more fucking human than when I like take it, you know, first thing in the morning. I'm like, oh, where did the bomb today? Oh, they're dying. Oh, this is fucked, you know, we're fucked. Yeah,
people dying on Instagram now with your coffee.
Yeah. What was I
going to
do today? Oh, yeah.
Go
balls on X. So speaking about phones and text and all that, or tech, what was it like being on Netflix then?
That, like I said, that was like a big, I mean, it wasn't a hasty decision, you know, like, because again, I'm like, as you can tell, I'm kind of not the reality TV shit, like.
Well, you did a good job, though. I mean, I watched a couple episodes. You were pretty natural at it.
No, I mean, I was in my element, so it's easy for me to be me.
Oh, okay, you know? Okay.
Yeah. I gave them some comedic gold. Of course, they edited all that shit out.
Probably like, I was so good.
It's fucking unhinged. I thought we were getting a Native American who's going to drop some crystals on us or some shit. And then we're fucking, you know, anyway. But it was good. It was good. They called me the first year. And they're like, hey, we're doing the show. And I'm like, well, I kind of jokingly said, when you guys get a budget, call me in a couple years, but just to, you know. And then the second year I was busy, but in that time my friend did the first year and it was exposure, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, when you're, but like,
also,
you know,
for your whole industry, for your whole art, you know, yeah, culture too, right?
That's what it's done, is it's raised like every college program, every gallery, every third person, people know about this very niche thing that I was involved in, has now gone like global, you know, like 14-year-old kids were sending me messages on Instagram. Hey, I love your work. You know, that's like, it feels like it's worth it. But when you're doing it, like, I'm, like I said, not a TV kind of person. I feel like we're, you know, we were talking about watching the war every morning over your coffee. It's like, I feel like we're living in a reality. Like, it's so scripted. It's such a like thought control. We're like controlling this narrative that is like unfolding. And I mean, I've listened to enough of your guys' shows, and you know, I feel like we're on the level, bro, you know? And so it just, so much of the, you know, it's just kind of counter to who I am, that natural flow. Okay, could you say that again like this? No, I'm not going to let you put words in my mouth. tell us again how you're your only competition. I'm like, that's not what I said either. I said, I'm like, I'm not. So Glass is crazy because it's like this community. Like I have a team of people that I can't make my work without. It's like being in a band, you know, you can't just shit on everyone in the band or you won't make music, you know? And so to put it in this competitive thing, I feel like art or, how do you judge art anyway? Obviously, we know what we all like. 90% of the art I see, I could just like, I could take it or leave it. You know, and I think that art itself is like, you know, if you go into these art programs, I've never, you know, I didn't go to art school, but I feel like it's just an extension of the smoking section in high school where, you know, it's like, oh, you're not a jack. You're not a, you know, you know, it's just like a non-competitive, it's an introspective journey, your path as an artist. So to make it like a reality show thing, a competition, like I said, I'm not trying to disparage it, but it was weird. Like,
yeah,
we worked on The Bachelor Canada or 90 Day Fiancé, the team, the crew worked on. I'm like, people get married in fucking 90 days? Is that a real thing? I mean, people will do anything for fucking attention, right? It's just insane, you know?
It's funny because I was watching that. I mean, me and my kids are watching the show in real time. We were cheering for you, obviously.
Yeah, thanks, bro. Yeah.
I kind of knew you weren't going to win. I could just tell by the competition. I mean, spoiler alert, I guess I spoiled it, but you did great. And we were cheering for you over here. Yeah. And then it was right because we got into the blown away.
That's what we're talking about. The Netflix series Blown Away. Yeah.
We got into
season it. Three, right?
Yeah, we got into it right away, though. The first year, the first time it came out, my daughters were pretty taken by it. So it just came to this thing that we could watch together. So as soon as the new season came out, we'd watch it and watch it. So,
well, glass blowing's cool. And it's one of those things I sometimes don't understand how people that see it don't. When I saw it, I knew I had to. I'm like, creative work. I was a mechanic and a tow truck driver. And I had like always been an artist. I come from a long family of artists and that sort of thing. But I just knew I had to do it. It was like such a, to be creative instead of working on cars for a living, like the illusion is shattered. It's not about me and my muscle car anymore. It was about like fixing this dude's thing that broke for the third time because he didn't fix it right the first time I told him. Or if you're a tow truck driver, I roll up and it's like, you're dealing with everybody on the worst day of the week. And so being creative, you know, I love glass blowing. I still do love it quite a bit.
So is it like, was it, cause it was, I think in the show, it's like 10, must be like a week or 10 days.
It was six weeks. I was there for.
You were there that long.
Toronto, went, saw the Hamilton Bulldogs, bro, went and ate killer Chinese food, went to Niagara. It was, that's the other thing I was getting at. So to make it a competition, when I showed up, I knew 7 of the 10 people I've known for 15 to 20 years. It was like, oh, hey, bro, what are you doing here? Oh, now we got game phase. We're like, I'm going to take this person out. Tell us how you're going to beat, you know. So that was a little, not to, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's just the reality of reality TV. How far did you make it through?
What's that? Well, I'm sorry, Graham. What was that?
How far did you make it through on that, in that season?
I did pretty good. They used a lot of me in the season. You know, like I'm comfortable talking, you know, I do a lot of public demonstrations. I think that sort of, you know, I've been doing it a long time. I felt comfortable. I had some good hits. The other part of it, everything you design on the show, they own the rights to, so you can't really make it again without splitting any of the costs with them. It was tricky. There was parts of it, like glass itself is really challenging because there was a lot of the parts of it that are real is the time constraint. And it's just really tricky to design, you know, it's not all, like I said, it's, so they would make us wear the same clothing every day so that they could stitch the interviews together and then like have you respond like, oh, I didn't say that for this. I answered another, you know, so that's a little how they make the sausage or whatever, but glass blowing is great. And, you know, I guess if it's just that, and that you and your daughters liked it, Darren, that's why you do it. You know what I mean? My daughter, I just got a little tiny torch. I want to teach. She's 10. And it's a crazy lot in life to think that we want my kids. She seems like an artist. So I really want to kind of try and share that, the family trade with her, kind of, if you will.
Man, the hosts, what were the hosts like? They drive me nuts on the show. Like they both drive me crazy.
Well, I mean, it's designed, like, what's the thing on Twitter where they're like, the outrage gets the more clicks? You know, they kind of have this sort of thing where it's like, I don't know if you've seen the last season. There was one, season 4 just got over. And, you know, they're checking. It's like the Bernays wing of Netflix. You know, they're like, narratives controlling your mind, you know, like, this is the public opinion. Gosh, doesn't everybody think like this? Well, you're out in left field, you know, God forbid. And, you know, I think you know, it's the art scene, you know, and I love people art, you know, I've dealt with a lot of artists and, you know, artists are weird. And, again, I'm not to be an isolationist. I think people are powerful. I feel like the word of, I feel like we need people. And that's what's great about podcasts. When I heard you guys, if I'm being honest, the first time I was like, oh, who is this? COVID? You guys, it was about the trucker thing. I'm like, oh, these sound like two guys that I would know just popping it up.
Yeah.
Like just uncut. You know what I mean? Like not for the can't, you know.
Well, that's funny. Yeah.
From Nova Scotia. And I'm like, okay, this sounds like it. I mean, not that there's not production value. I mean, I know you guys do a lot to do this, but it was just a conversation, you know, like, and again, I'm in the studio working. I got it in the headphones. I'm like, yeah, here we go. Here's a take that you're not hearing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's what it's about. We don't want to edit it or anything. It's supposed to be raw conversations, you know. That's, and hopefully it still resonates with people. I mean, even a lot of the bigger podcasts are starting to edit the hell out of their shows. I'm starting to tell now that even the answers to the questions aren't timed properly. Like, you can see that they're inserting them or squishing the spaces down. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, cutting time and yeah. Hopefully, I haven't blown this up by saying anything wrong. I know that you guys have two. You know, I listen to both shows.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
So that's funny because I figured you'd go in there and it'd be like 10 days. It'd be like bam, 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 and it was like one a day. But so you were in there. Was it like 5 days a week, 6 days a week, seven?
Yeah.
Days
so you know, you shoot for a couple days, 2 or 3 days. That's what I mean. There's like it's. Yeah, it was good, and you know, I was doing pretty good before the show aired. But you can't like beat that reach. You know what I mean? I was having that shit. Like you mentioned the Connor, I'd already had my first solo museum show. And I just did a big thing at the Seattle Aquarium waterfront, the new waterfront in Seattle. I've had these like successes that, you know, I had a career that, but you guys, shit, you wouldn't know who I was, you know what I mean? Like, so there's Netflix, you know, thank you, Bernays, for your all-encompassing global reach, sir.
Did anyone on the Egypt tour recognize you?
Yeah, a couple people did. There was the Egypt tour. That was fucking amazing. You know, Ben is another, you know, he's got a little homestead at too, and I really loved his stuff.
He's there right now.
Yeah.
So Kyle flew out today, I think. Kyle flew out today. Was it today or tomorrow? I think he flew out today.
Oh, cool.
They're, I don't know. Well, we could probably say it, whatever. They're going to scan the Serapium boxes.
Oh, at the Serapium.
Going to scan all the boxes in the Serapium.
My roommate was Karoy, the Hungarian dude. I don't know. I should say
that's
that.
The dude he's going with. That's the dude he's going with. The Hungarian dude is the dude he's going with. So, and then, so they went to the Petri Museum together.
Yeah.
And now they just got permission to go to like two or three more museums. I mean, I was talking to Graham yesterday. I was like, it's crazy. Like, our buddies are now like the cutting edge.
Fucking history books. These guys are going down in the fucking history books. And when I met Cottaway, he was my roomie on the Egypt tour, you know, to save a couple bucks. We were roommates. And he's an electrical engineer. I was like, so you're going to do what at the Petrie Museum? And he had, because he's comes from this other, already like accredited industry, they're like, oh yes, Mr. Karoy, from you study at blah blah, you know, and from what I've been listening to his podcast, he did one with Adam Young, that one's really good, and you know, he just did one with the bros, and the work is just crazy, you know. It's just like, that's a huge unanswered question. Like, and then once you know that kind of stuff, like the shit on Netflix, I'm like, oh, another shoot 'em up shit, you know. I mean, I just like, this is the craziest, like, sort of there was this one like half vase in the underneath the Saqqara pyramid. I'm like, am I gonna get fucking caught up at the airport with this fucking thing?
They don't give a shit, as dude, as I can tell. Dude, I left with like 18 pounds of rocks.
Yeah, bro, I was gonna like mail them to myself. I'm like, but those things, like, and so as somebody who's like, you know, my son's a machinist. And I was there, one of the other guys. So we were there with a pretty good group. They always have, and the people that are drawn to those things are just my kind of people, bro. Yeah, like, exactly. You know what I mean? Like my other buddy there, Chris King, he went to the Petri Museum with those guys, and we have a mutual friend from the glass world, but they're also like the original mountain bike builder guys from Marin County. But they just do these micro measure, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I know enough about timing and tolerances and thousandths of an inch, you know, that kind of shit. It's like, no, dude, you know, none of this shit adds up. It's, there's a massive mystery, you know what I mean? And again, just like is a common theme of the news, like nothing you've been told is true. It's just like, where, okay.
None of that, there's no way they didn't know.
Yeah. So there's no way
like that. The first dudes who went to Egypt weren't like, wow, this is fucking crazy. You know what I mean? Then they just how do I find out from my two buddies about this like stone smoothing on the pyramids? You know, it's like, shouldn't there have been some pictures of this? Shouldn't there have been like something of like,
well, they did where you can
see clear tooling marks. Like, we never heard about identical vases, you know, and it's like,
well, the weird thing is that researchers in the 1800s knew they were calling. Yeah,
they knew
back then.
Weiss. Well, and then even Anthony West, John Anthony West. So I read Fingerprints of the Gods in like 2000. And I mean, it sounds corny, but like it really just changed my life in some weird way. I was like, no, magic is real, not magic like, oh, abracadabra. Like
fireball, like,
magic. There's just so many fucking things we don't know the fucking answers to. And then again, there's somebody telling you what to think about it. It's like, no, I'm the accredited expert. Or like, I don't know.
What was it like going there in person into Egypt? Because you've obviously been following it a little bit. Like, did it change your, because I know it affected Darren quite a bit. Did it have any effect on you just seeing it physically?
Well, I'm a tactile person. I work with my fucking hands, dude. And like to touch those stones, touch that vase and feel that wall thickness. It's like perfect, dude. I've made thousands of vases. And obviously none of mine are scannable, you know, but I just know what that is. You know, I know what the forms are, the geometry, you know, I've studied like Roman form, you know, and like, it's just like, they're perfect. You know, it's insane. There's no straight edge on the whole fucking thing, nowhere, and the wall thickness all the way in. And I mean, what's so cool about it is, like you said, your two bros, Karoi, these guys are going to go down in history because there's been, you know, as long as people have been going to Egypt, like, how did they move the big stones? That's the great unanswerable forever. But these are just other questions that is just like, and we're not even going to talk about this. And in this dusty old case over here are all these little, like, Chris King said something that was really cool. He was like, there's no tool marks. No, the piece is the witness mark. Anything that's that measurable is the witness mark of a tool. Like, it didn't just manifest and there was no stone pounding something perfectly circular, you know, or we'll just turn it in the, you know, I don't know. It's pretty cool.
Well, did you have like a big, I mean, cause I went there because I went, you know, I had all the, you think, you know, something just from researching it or looking, watching the things, but then you go there. And when I came away from there, I was just, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've heard me say it a bunch of times on the show, but I just came away with this thing as a tool, man. It was a machine. It's very much more like a hydroelectric dam itself, it's very much seems like mechanical. I've used to work in mines. I've been inside dams. I've been inside these huge mega structures, and they kind of have that same feel to them. And the other thing they have is a lot of these like sort of harmonic things because they're made so perfectly. And, they all have that sort of sulfur smell. I mean, I don't know if Jeffrey Drum is right on the money, but I think he's pretty close. But I came away after going into all them pyramids and I was like, people were never meant to be inside here.
Yeah.
This was like, they were dumping, I don't know if they were dumping some shit down them shafts or what was going on, but I just got the sense that it was like, almost like a different take on a pressure chamber, you know, like we do them today by rolling like 2-inch thick titanium steel. And we do the same thing with no round or with no straight edges. We'll have a round vessel with rounded ends and we'll pressurize the shit out of it. So, you know, if you needed to do that without steel or metal work or something like that, you could do it just by, you know, making your chamber and then just piling all sorts of fucking rocks on top of it. I don't know if it was for fertilizer, for power. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw that one. That was pretty compelling. You know, obviously, like Chris Dunn's thing. I guess, again, like I can only, you know, I've got no answers. I can speak to my personal experience touching it with my hands. It's like, you know, I've obviously read about it forever. It's unlike anything else. You know, I'd love to go, you know, other bucket list is obviously Peru. And like places in
Mexico. I heard that's coming next October.
Yeah. Dude, I would love to take my, so what when Kyle and they brought his family there, that was like his kids were there and his wife. And it was like, I'm like, this is what life should be, you know, like learning with your family like that too. It's like, that's what I want to share with my kids, you know, having kids. I think that's a full circle of life. You know what I mean? Like I've, you know, and my role has changed, you know, but I mean, I guess, yeah, it was just super powerful to see those kids there too. And just taking that in through, you know, not even paying attention, just sword fighting and doing that shit. And, you know, I'm not Muhammad's kids. I'm blanking on his name right now. Yusuf's kids, and going to the, you know, and just seeing the kids there. I was like, this is what it's about. Like they're learning like firsthand. But in being in the chamber, I guess speaking to my, for being like, and doing the resonance thing with Yusuf, and I have this chronic back pain because I lift heavy fucking shit all my life as a day laborer and you know, art, you know, I'm just a guy lifting heavy things. I got out of that box and my fucking back pain was gone. I was like, what the fuck? And I had laid on the floor, and I don't know if my eyes were adjusting to the dark. I swear I could just look up, not to get all UFO-y. I don't do too heavy woo, you know, but I'm a spiritual person. I mean, I've seen an orb. I'll tell you about that if you want, but it's not one of those things that defines me, but like, I just felt, yeah. Like I just felt like I was in the center of this thing, you know, that has been here forever. And, you know, it's not magic, but it's like wonder. I just had like wonder. I was just like, we don't even fucking know the tip. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe someone's taken a stab and gotten some of this right, but it was such a massive machine. Like we don't, what was fucking going on, dude? You know, to build, like move a 70 pound, dude, I move things, you move a 5-ton anything, move a 10 ton anything, dude. You know, those stones of Baalbek, the, you know, the great one figure, you know, and I cut glass. So grinding things on the Mohs scale, I've done thousands of hours of that, dude. And like, none, it just is unreal. It's like magic. It's like, how the fuck? It's perfectly symmetrical. It's measurable. I mean, you, Darren, you built shit, building things like square and plumb. And what the fuck, dude? How?
So did you go to Elephantine Island by any chance? Did you see those massive granite boxes?
Yeah, dude, with the bull note, like the, and then it's got like the facets on it. Yeah. I mean, and then just for me to touch it, it was like a real, like, okay, I've come this far in my life. I was exhausted. It was a fucking, it was an amazing trip. I got it, but if I'm just being honest, because that's what I do, that the cruise ship part, I was kind of like, I was like back in the diesel zone. I was like, oh, I'm fucking dying back here. But
even in your room?
Yeah. Oh, dude, we were like, we could smell it in my room. I was just like diesel fucking sick at the end of it. But the,
we were up at the front, so we didn't have any diesel. But that was the dope smoking spot, was on the third level back at the diesel engine. So you definitely got some whiffs of some diesel.
Yeah. Puffing and puffing. But it being in there, like when I came out, when I opened my eyes and stood up, I couldn't even see the sea. You know, it was dark. I just felt like I saw stars. Like I just felt like I was in, you know, that saying, like, we're just on a ball, we're on a spaceship cruising through the universe. I felt that in there. I was like, holy shit, I feel like I'm out there. And like I said, I don't do woo. I've heard you know, I saw an orb once about the size of a basketball about 20 feet away from me. And I don't, you know, I guess I'm telling everyone in the world now, but
what color was it? What is it like?
Kind of like see-through and orange. And I don't even like talking about it. It doesn't define me. It was aware of me. It had a presence. Like it didn't tell me anything. I had a witness. I actually had to, I'm like, yo, Wolf, come here, dude. And, my friend came out and I didn't even tell him. I just like, I want to see if I don't want to have like this dual hallucination with this guy. I'm like, Wolf, what's up? And he's like, what? And I'm just kind of like looking up and he's like, oh, I'm like, oh, you see it too. It's not just fucking me. Right. And the thing just did a couple little boop and took off. And yeah, I mean, it was just a moment in time. I don't fucking dwell on it, but that's unexplainable. Maybe it's ball lightning. I don't fucking know. But I just, that, what's that?
Graham's a dweller.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all good. You know,
well, it reminds me of where was it? Where was it, on the coast or like in Northeast Washington?
Yeah. Just outside Seattle. And
wasn't it Northwest, Northwest Washington.
Yeah.
What time of night was it? Around 10?
It wasn't midnight, but it wasn't. It was dark. Around you 10, know, it 11? Gets dark here early in the winter. It was dark out, pitch black. We kind of lived near the woods by a creek. And
I mean, dude, we had the guy on way back when and on Grand America, Terry Ray, the invasion of the orange orbs. And he specifically teased out all the orange orb sightings, like the one you had, right? And he mapped them all out. And there was patterns like crazy coming from three different underwater places at the certain times of night, traveling around. Like
it was crazy. I mean, again, I just bring it up because like there's something magical about the pyramids, you know, there's something, and it could be completely explainable, objective truth, like Austrian fucking scales and beams and measurements, but whatever it is, it's still so like, we don't even know yet. You know what I mean? And I, you know, I'm a spiritual person. I feel like my ancestors still see me, you know, I'm trying to like live, or even if it's just a way to live, you know, how people find it great.
Yeah.
They find purpose at church. I try and do honorable things. You know, I didn't learn how to be, I mean, it took me a long time. I had to go through the program of AA to understand how to do selfless things and get out of my fucking head for a second.
Yeah, me too.
That's my story. But again, not heavy on the, but whatever it was, I saw it, you know, and I figured if I'm going to tell anybody, this is a good place to tell.
Yeah, this is great. Yeah.
You know,
wasn't it Grant Cameron changing orbs around too? Wasn't he chasing orbs around, Grant Cameron?
Well, Charlie Red Star is what he called his, but yeah, that was in Winnipeg. He was there, but that was like a whole community, the whole town would know about it and they'd go out and watch it in the fields and stuff. Right.
Well, and then like you go down YouTube and I mean, I don't know, the Stephen Greer, and then somehow I feel like now that the government endorsed Blue Bean program, I'm like, oh bro, I mean, I can't even, God, it was great until you guys fucking said
something. I know. It's so weird to be on this side of it. Now I'm like, oh, I can't follow it anymore. I can't keep up. I don't really care what they say because I don't believe a word that comes out of their mouths. And yeah.
I mean, have they ever told the truth? I mean, I've like even the weather, I mean, just anything. That's why I got to put my phone down and get out in the yard. I could be like a low, we only have 5 acres, and I could just be like a low level, like groundskeeper. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. This is my calling to some simpler things too.
Yeah,
for sure. I've been painting, like physically house painting for a couple days now. And dude, it's like, you know, it's kind of meditative. It's very working, you know, working with your hands and you get a good feeling afterwards when you've changed the look of something. And yeah. So yeah, it's I'm enjoying it. But do you have a hot shop right in your place? Like, do you have your own?
I just put in a 400 amp panel. It's nice being in the country. You can kind of just like country permit things, and I put up a building, and there was a couple buildings on my place already. You know, it's I'm just building a little shop. I had a shop in Seattle for a long time. I rent a public art space. I just quit my job this year, and I worked for a really famous artist here for 24 years.
Wow.
And so I always had use of that shop, and it's a huge expense to have a glass shop. That's another reason why it's such
a niche
community thing. But I'm getting selfish and isolated, you know, and I'll take care of my people. I have a crew of guys and gals that work for me, and
wow,
they're other artists. So they don't just, you know, they're not employees, but I pay them like contractors. And for a long time I did that, just like a day laborer for a lot of other artists.
Yeah. So that's good. You guys work together on all that stuff. So do you blow glass all the time then still, like every day?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I messed my back up a little bit ago, but
go back to Egypt.
Do you have your stuff in a whole bunch of different museums too, right? Or galleries, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I've been in, I don't.
Residencies, is that what they call it?
Yeah. Two different. I've got a bunch of different galleries that show my work, you know, a handful. Santa Fe is a really big one. There's one in Seattle, a couple on the East Coast. You know, there's actually one in Toronto that shows my work. That's my international gallery, if you will. But, Yeah, I've had museums are kind of where I'm at. I like it when museums collect my work because it adds provenance to your other work. And it's, you know, it's that's the whole business end of it. I still love doing it and being creative. It is a business. I'd be fucked if it wasn't, if I didn't enjoy doing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then you get some like totems in there too. So some inspiration from.
So know, that on the top of that picture, if you scroll up all the way to the top, that's my great, great grandfather, Kokolt. And so that's my Indian name, Kokolt. It means story of the war club or spirit of the war club. And he's carving a pole for Kobe, Japan at the 61 World Fair.
Wow.
That's in downtown Seattle. And he was like a tribal ambassador. You know, he gifted the pole to Japan, you know, sort of like post-World War II. And I actually just went to Japan with my buddy who carved the replacement pole. And, you know, it's just Native people reaching out to other Native people. I always love what Muhammad Ali said about why he didn't go to Vietnam to like go kill little brown kids that looked more, had more in common with him. And, you know, my dad went to Vietnam and, but I always felt like Native people, I love seeing this where they stood alone from the United States, you know, even though we're super represented in the armed forces, I think it's probably more out of need that they, you know, but also the fact that they are, you know, reach outside the government. Yeah. So these are story poles, you know, that's fishing people. And these, my website is grossly outdated. So none of these pieces are within the last six or something years. So
no, no, that's okay. It gives you an idea of how beautiful these are. I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
In my attempt to take myself seriously, I'm having a professional website built because put it together, and it's the, you know, I kind of, you know, in a real world, I should have a YouTube channel. I sort of just do my Instagram, which is a like a spattering of my, my work and my family, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. There you go. Wow.
Yeah. I just had a residency in Ohio. You know, I've been fortunate enough to travel around the world doing this, which is a weird way to be.
Yeah.
So see the screen sharing. You guys are at a tech level above me.
I love your work. It's amazing. And I mean, I think I'm waiting for you to do your orb sighting as a project.
I actually did just start making little orange orbs, but they're more about fish eggs. You know, like salmon eggs. My cousin, he runs a nonprofit called Children of the Setting Sun Productions, and they're getting a lot of traction with the, you know, he just had a movie called The Salmon People, and I want to kind of see if I can link to his. He always told me I should run a nonprofit. I'm like, bro, I'm nonprofit. I can't hardly run a for profit. I don't want to. I need some profit too. I can't just be giving it away. But I want to make the sales of these fish egg, these little orange orbs, these row things go to his project.
Oh, that's good.
Do they still tax you?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Does the government still do you still have to pay taxes down there?
I still do. I mean, there's another artist in our tribe who fucking fought for years and finally got allowed to. I just don't like fucking around with the government. I don't even want them to know. I mean, they know everything. Why they ask you to fucking like formulate your taxes and then tell you fucking got it wrong is like beyond me. Or why they don't teach kids that in school. So I do pay my taxes. I have a building up at Lummi, on the reservation. There's things, there's called fee land and non-fee land. I just, you know, everyone feels like Native Americans are just, you know, it's common to think like, oh, you're a per cap tribe or you're getting handouts or school's free. But it's not like, you know, I don't want any of the free shit. I'd rather make my own way and be beholden to no one. I do try to support the tribes, where I have like charity, like I donate to the tribal things, you know, like the schooling and stuff like that. Cause you know, I think it's good, but I've kind of, I started a Native American youth glass program, at a really famous glass school in Washington called Pilchuck. And it's great thing. And it's a couple days, but it's kind of a weird carrot to dangle for like res kids. It was originally because it's like, you can't just take a weekend workshop on learning how to play the violin. You got to like dedicate a couple fucking years of your life to doing this. And it's a lot, like, I use the music analogy a lot because, I mean, you just suck at making music till it finally, you know, you have to put in years before somebody's showing up to your fucking violin recital and take the earplugs out. Like, oh, finally. Glass is a lot like that. And so I think long term, I want to build a, not a school, but I want to have a studio on the reservation where I can kind of, you kind of got to go to where people are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, I guess just giving them a taste of it and maybe trying to plant the seed almost, you know, it's like, here's a couple days of like what it's like. And
you know, and it is great. And like, so the first year I couldn't get anybody to come. I was just like, look, I'm your cousin. Send me your kid. And, you know, send them, is it trade school? I'm like, no, we feed them. They got cabins and we could only get kids from the foster program. And so that was kind of like a little, it was such a, like, Glass has this high cost of entry and is sort of like elite, like contemporary art surrounded by money. And so to bring these kids in that didn't have more than a change of clothes for a week and like didn't have a coat, or one kid ate like 17 bowls of Lucky Charms, you know, it was just kind of like culture shock, you know what I mean? So now we've kind of tuned in and we bring in kids from the college, you know, and there's a lot, you've been in the BC, there's, it's crazy to be like when I go to the East Coast and you travel around New York and the name of every street is some tribal name or something. You just don't see native people. So living in the Northwest in Vancouver, it's like the Pueblos or, you know, in First Nations, like there's still native people around, which is, I mean, I feel real fortunate, you know, to have those pictures of my like great grandfather and know where I come from. You know, I think that's just a lot of the proximity of us being like one of the last tribes to sign a treaty, you know, but
most of BC is not even treated.
Yeah. Or recognized. Yeah. I was trying to remember that name when you were talking about the water, you know, just like in Michigan, but not even that, like Wet'suwen'en.
Wet'suwen'en.
I always butcher it. But, you know, as soon as the Dakota Access Pipeline was denied, they just go over the border and just do it up there. And then to see these people being like forcibly removed from their home. I mean, that's just, you know, again, you got to be aware of what you see on the internet, but it kind of just makes you so fucking mad. It's like the same people that manifest destiny our country not so long ago, they're so keen to take people in a minority position and use that as the bludgeon to fuck other minority people with. You know, they're like, oh, look, we've got this person. You know what I mean? It just, I don't know. I still don't, like I said, I just don't baseline, just don't trust the government. That's, you know, can I do what I can for my people? Tribal government is its own crazy thing. You know, like it's, you know, it's the original socialist system. You know, it's like there's these things and once casinos get involved and money gets involved and the person in charge, somebody's not getting some, you know, there's just always, you know, my hat's off to people that can become politicians for good reasons or cops, you know, that get into it for the right reason. But it just seems like this headache that I could not parse out, you know?
Dan, this has been great. The time has flown by. Where can people find your work?
FridayGlass.com. Better website coming, promise. Dan Friday, Instagram. Yeah, keep up your work, boys. I love your stuff, man.
Yeah.
You guys are great, man.
Thanks.
I'll see you on that tour. I'm coming. I got to come on one of those. You come to Washington State, that's too close for me not come say hi.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. We'll bump into each other for sure.
Yep.
All right, Dan. Well, keep making that great art. Keep fighting the good fight. The chats have been loving it. So this has been a great chat. We hope you have a good night.
Yeah, you too, bros.
Thanks, man.
Ciao. And that was a chat with Dan Friday Glass. What'd you think?
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, he's fantastic. Check out his work. He's got, I mean, I didn't go through the whole website. There's owls and bears and stuff on there and all kinds of ravens. It's pretty cool. I know he said it's old, but it looks pretty cool to me. So
yeah, the show's worth watching too on Netflix. So,
oh yeah. Yeah. He was great on there. His first one that he won, I shouldn't spoiler, but the first episode with the door, I think it was the open door or closing, holding the door open, I think was what it was called. And it was just that hand. It was beautiful. I mean, unbelievable. I can't even imagine how they, like, I can't even fathom because I haven't, ever really learned how that works. I can't, again, the artist stuff, I can't fathom how people do it. I just cannot.
Especially the glass stuff, because they're just like doing it all on the end of a wand, you know?
Yeah.
Like with a magic wand. So big thanks to Dan for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Even bigger thanks, of course, if you're one of those supporters over at grimerica.ca/support. Check out grimericaoutlaw.ca for the other podcast. Contact at the cabin for the trips. And adultbrain.ca for the audiobooks. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
The fuel for your worries.